Talking with Greg Hunter, who's out there being the watchdog for the USA. We'll get to your calls and questions coming up here in just a minute. We are talking about foreclosure gate and this idea that as hard as this might be to believe, that 80% of the mortgages that are held at a national level by these mega banks, that 80% of them don't come with the proper paper that would give them the authority to say, when you sold off your mortgage, you own your house. That in fact, they can say, we've been receiving the money, but we don't have the clear title to give you. That's a scary thought. They say it's in there or it's over there. It's in Washington somewhere, but we don't know where it is. And we can't give that to you. You need to know that before you sell your house. You don't want to go through all the trouble of paying off a mortgage, which has been sold or flipped by your local bank. You don't want to go through that trouble and then find out when you're coming to closing day, you can't provide proof that you actually own the house or that you have clear title to it. So will the attorneys general help from around the United States to sort this out? That's just where we left it. Coming up next on Coast to Coast, this is Ian Ponet. All right, so Greg Hunter is breaking down this financial crisis for us that is breaking down in front of us, USAWatchdog.com. So you were just saying the attorneys general around the country, every state has an interest in maintaining its value, its real estate value, both in attracting residents, but also paying for services, not to mention attracting business and the local economy. So what are they doing to protect their local interests to make sure that at least on a state-by-state basis, people who own their property can prove they own their property?
And it comes down to the banks. The banks have to prove they own the property to foreclose. And, there are 50 state attorney generals, and they're all looking into what's being called foreclosure gate, right? So Iowa Attorney General Don Miller is leading the investigation in all 50 states. And I was shocked when I heard this. Do you know what their focus is? Preventable foreclosures. Wait a minute. You are the top law enforcement litigator in your state, and you're trying to prevent foreclosures? He called it a public policy issue. Now, you think about that. Here's this quote, the ones in which small changes can keep homeowners in their home, it benefits all parties, the borrower keeps the house, the servicer continues to collect fees, and the investors receive more income than a foreclosure would bring. The community has one less home. Hello, not a single indictment. This is the biggest financial fraud in history. And what's Tom Miller and the attorney generals banding together to do? To make sure the income stream stays going through from the homeowner, through the banks to collect their fees, and through to the investors, not criminal indictments. This is fraud. This is layers and layers of what I think and what is provably what others think is fraudulent activity from and even the FBI. Tipped off as far back as 2004, and said that there was rampant, their words, rampant mortgage fraud in the loan application process. The securities weren't created correctly because they don't have the proof, the promissory note, the financial instrument like a Federal Reserve note. So my question is, where are the indictments? This is 40 times bigger than the savings and loan crisis. We put away 1,000 financial elites. We don't have a single indictment.
But could it be that in this case, you need to secure the properties first before you destabilize it by revealing just how unstable the market really is?
And you know what? This is a major tenet of the financial industry, and even the president of the United States who says, "Hey, we're going to destabilize." So we have to have fraud in the economy for our economy to work. We're sunk.
Well, all right, but no. But back up for a second.
No, that's what you're saying. You're saying.
I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is it does. You go after the fraud after you secure. It'd be like saying we're going to pull back and we're going to reveal who's behind the curtain. But before we reveal who's behind the curtain, let's just make sure that everybody knows that regardless of who it is behind the curtain, you will have some protection as to what happens to your property so that you're not the one that ends up being the loser. And maybe that's partly because if he's leading the investigation. Now, believe me, I actually, for reasons I won't get into, I'm actually not a fan of the Attorney General of the state of Iowa. But anyway, let's just say that he decides that that since they're leading the way on this, he doesn't want the Iowa homeowners to get stung. And so before he gets into the muck of who it is that's actually created this crisis and bring somebody to justice for it, he wants to make sure the average person doesn't pay for that in advance.
I understand that. Then we got the wrong people. We have law enforcement people doing ombudsman and negotiation work. We got the wrong people spearheading this investigation. The reason why the Attorney General's got involved is because there's fraud. The only way to fix this problem is to give people who don't have jobs, jobs, and to make real estate prices march upward endlessly. And that's not going to happen.
No,
there's going to be a lot longer, a lot more real estate defaults and a lot lower prices coming because we're at all-time lows on the 30-year right now because the Fed is forcing down interest rates by buying all these, this new round of money printing, quantitative easing, if you will. They're forcing down interest rates. And the scary thing about it is if you get a mortgage, you may get it from your bank, but they're going to turn right around and sell it to Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, or the FHA. 95% of mortgages are supplied by you and me, the taxpayer, the government, at ridiculously low rates. And I think when rates go up, the values will march downward.
Well, actually, I want to talk to you about that in a good transition. Several different pieces at USA Watchdog. .com. You go there and read about this, at least part of what we're talking about this Fed money dump coming up. But before we get there, there is something else. Like, I had to keep referencing my wife because I really know nothing about mortgage industry, but she does. And what she's saying is the numbers don't even work. That the idea that you are, that you have to, in order for the value of a home to go up, there has to be a kind of a competitive bidding for that home. If three people want that home, then that the price of that home will go up and the desirability of your neighborhood will improve, et cetera. But if there are three homes for every buyer, then the value of at least two of those homes inevitably will be driven down, if not all three will be driven down because there's only one buyer. And that's where we're headed because we're at the end of this population bubble. Where the baby boomers are beginning to retire, they're beginning to sell their homes, and there's not enough of the next generation of home buyers coming on the other end to snap up all of the homes that are already existing. True?
True, and it's one of the big problems, one of the several multitude perfect storm of problems. I mean, it's one of them is demographics. One of them is dollar devaluation. Another one is derivatives. It's all this debt, and what the Fed is doing is they're trying to make debt cheaper to put a floor under housing prices. And really, we shouldn't be doing that at all. We should let the market set the price so the value is there. So when you buy something, you know it's not going to go down another 50% from here. You know, you're not going to buy a $250,000 house and 3 years from now when rates skyrocket back up, it's worth $125,000.
Right. So then isn't that part of the untold story of the bad news of our economy in the future is that you can dump money, you can print money, you can hang on to where we are right now with the mortgages, but no matter whether it's Republicans or Democrats, nobody can secure our future way of life. Nobody can come in and say, I will preserve our way of life because there aren't enough buyers behind the sellers to keep these values up. And we're going to run into neighborhoods where they'll just merely by attrition, by old age, by people dying off, there'll be fewer and fewer people to buy the homes that already exist.
You are correct. And on top of that, what you have is you have, you know, the number one question asked in America, and it's the dumbest question you can ever ask, and that is, what are the payments? And as interest rates, my dad used to say, you know, what's the difference? A $150,000 house at 10% or a $300,000 house at 5%? I'll tell you what the difference is. The $150,000 house at 10% is a much better value. And people don't get that. You don't buy an interest rate. You buy an asset. And if what's going to happen? I wrote about this today. I wrote a big, long kind of an overview of what's going on in the economy. What is really going on in the economy? Enormous changes. This is not going to spring back to the way it was before. This is not going to be a couple of years, and then we're going to be right back to where we know. This is a giant, monumental changes in the country with the value of the dollar, interest rates. What's going to happen when the government stops supplying the mortgages? There's no way that Bank of America or J.P. Morgan Chase can compete with 4.25% 30-year money. Nobody would be that stupid to loan it, but we are. What's going to happen when interest rates go back to, 7 or 8%? What are the payments? They're going to go up. Where are the values? They're going to go down. There's no question about it.
Right.
And we've been on a free, we have had this privileged place in the world where we won World War II. We have the USS Kitty Hawk. We have nukes. We went to the moon. We have the U.S. dollar. We're the world's reserve currency. And that's what they're doing now. They're doing this money printing because the banks are not really as strong as they appear because the accounting world changes. In reality, they're probably teetering on insolvency. They're going to be forced. If you have 60 million mortgages with MERS, and you have all these mortgage-backed securities, and one of the major tenets in any contract is, hey, you can't sell me fraud. Otherwise, you got to buy it back. In this case, it's called a putback. Well, Brad Miller, a congressman from North Carolina, he was on MSNBC about five weeks ago, and he said, and I quote, in almost every contract, if they, the mortgage-backed securities, weren't what they were contractually required to be, not fraudulent, then the bank has to buy them back. And here's the killer. That's probably more than they could buy back, and we may be right back where we were 2 years ago. That'd be a financial meltdown.
Right.
So all the money printing, what you heard was $600 billion. Think about that. They're going to print at the Federal Reserve out of thin air. Actually, it's computerized. But they're going to print up $75 billion each and every month for the next 8 months and buy our debt, finance our country with the debt. And then on top of it, which didn't get a lot of play, they have another nearly $300 billion that they're going to buy some more mortgage-backed securities, which really are the mistakes of bankers. Now, if you look at William Black, and if you take a look at his math, and he's the professor of economics at the University of Missouri, Kansas City, and he says, hey, 80% of the mortgage-backed securities in Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are fraudulent. Well, the Fed just bought, spent 20 months buying $1.25 trillion, 80%. They bought $1 trillion in fraud, according to William Black.
And they just bailed out these banks again by giving them actual cash dollars for something which they either don't own, can't prove they own, or is bad debt.
Or is not worth near what
it's not. Right. It's just bad debt. So it's they come out way, way ahead. And then what will they do with that money that the banks get? What will they do with it?
They will, look at the price of gold, look at the price of silver, look at the price of oil. Goldman Sachs is a bank, but can you go to a Goldman Sachs, can you open a Goldman Sachs checking account? They're operating more like a government-sanctioned hedge fund than a bank.
Right.
With FDIC insurance and bond backing and who knows, and sweetheart deals through AIG where they were paid in their credit default swaps. The idea, you've heard about these black pools. The mortgage-backed security that we're talking about, those 60 million mortgages that were bundled, they're sitting in mirrors, they were electronically sliced and diced and traded and sold to CalPERS and sold to the Texas State Teachers Fund and whoever else they were sold to, pension funds, municipalities, whoever, banks. If you take a look at the mortgage, what that is, it's really a derivative. And there are all kinds of derivatives. There are derivatives for credit cards. In other words, the payments from the cards, student loans, the payments from the loans, the mortgage-backed securities, the payments from the mortgages. What happens to these derivatives? Where do you go get your equity from a tranche of credit card debt, student loans, or tranches of mortgages that were worth 40% less than what they were when the loan was created?
Right.
How do you get your value when people quit paying their mortgages?
Well, let me take this in a slightly different direction and ask you then a question that comes up from time to time, since we're talking about our currency and the value of our currency. And I'm reading this book right now called When Money Dies.
Yeah, Niall Ferguson.
Yeah, it's great. It's really interesting. But tell me, why would there be a – how could we benefit? This is kind of weird, but there's a lot of people out there believe that this is a setup – for creating a one world economy. And I think, why would anybody want to buy into our economy? Why, if you were another government, if you were another country, why would you want to hitch your wagon to things that are obviously misconceived as what we have going on right now?
In the, why would you buy American debt or American treasuries or American stock market? That's a good question. And that's the big unspoken. I wrote a thing about what the G20 is not talking about. And here you have the producer of the world's reserve currency. And what I mean by that is all debts are settled in dollars, basically, internationally. Oil is bought and sold in dollars. Gold is bought and sold in dollars.
Right.
Well, the world doesn't want to use dollars. The world is getting a little cranky that, hey, wait a minute, if you were Argentina, we would devalue their peso so fast if they were printing it like crazy. It would be funny if it were America.
Right.
And but the world wants to, they don't, you know, the people, for example, Saudi Arabia and OPEC says, hey, we think oil should be $100 a barrel because you're devaluing their currency and we need more dollars to equal what we're giving you. In other words, you can't print candy wrappers and toilet paper and pay us with that and us give you real assets back. And that's why oil is going up. You know, there's kind of a supply demand quotient with oil in that, you know, we're pretty well supplied, but it's a proxy for inflation. Look at gold. Gold went from $300 an ounce or $255 in 2001, and now it's quadrupled.
Right,
that's one of the biggest untold stories there is.
Why not on this show? Not on this show. It's not.
Well, why didn't Wall Street say, hey, you know, you could just buy gold, pay one simple
one-time fee,
store it in a safety deposit box, and in 10 years you're going to quadruple your money. What happened in the last 10 years with the S&P 500? Well, it's down about 20%. The dollar buying power is down.
Right.
If you minus out AIG and Wachovia and Lehman Brothers and Bear Stearns and the big hits that Merrill Lynch and Bank of America took, Wachovia went out of business. The S&P 500 wouldn't look so good.
Right.
That was a bad place to put your money. We're all supposed to be rich. Hold, be diverse, hold for the long term. Well, how long do I have to hold this stuff?
Right. Well, until they're done using it.
Yeah.
So that it comes down to again is other countries don't want to use our currency.
They're starting to not want to use it yet.
Right. They're flat out saying we don't. Isn't there somebody else we can use as our? China has already talked about this. So what's the future for the U.S. dollar that you see it, Greg Hunter?
Well, I'll tell you about what some of the best minds in the country see where they see the U.S. dollar, and they see it getting cut in half. One of the things Barack Obama said is we want to double our exports in the next 5 years. Well, what everybody's trying to do instead of taking the big banks and saying, no, we're taking a receivership, all these debts, we're going to cancel them out, and we're going to get down to what actual value does all these assets have, and then that's going to be your equity. And then, you know, the bank will be taking the receivership, will protect the depositors, but the bondholders and the shareholders, bye-bye, you're done, you're toast. Well, that's not going to happen. And what they want to do is grow their way out of it. Well, you see what kind of growth is in the world. Nobody's growing. So the president said that he wants to double our exports. That's a noble thing, but how are they going to do that? And they're going to do it by cutting the value of the dollar. You're just going to have to live with inflation. And listen, the Fed is printing money out of thin air and financing our debt. And they are, buying the mistakes of bankers, mortgage-backed securities. People like John Williams at ShadowStats.com says, hey, be on the lookout for a sudden and swift collapse of the buying power of the dollar, which will skyrocket inflation. Namely, in a few weeks' time, maybe you're paying, $3 a gallon for gas, you're paying $5 a gallon in a couple of months.
All right,
Who knows?
I want to ask you about that then, too. USAWatchdog.com is the website. Greg Hunter, investigative reporter, and you'll link up to him through coasttocoastam.com. That's just where I wanted to go, is ask for warning signs ahead. What else do you see are the signs we should be looking for, the mileposts on the road to ruin, as it were, on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. Here's how it's going to work. We'll get to a couple of calls before the top of the hour, but I know the phones have been ringing like crazy. Everybody wants to talk to Greg Hunter, USA Watchdog. So we'll get to a few before next hour, just to take some of the pressure off our final hour on Coast to Coast. And so if you have a question about the economy, if you have a question about a foreclosure gate, if where this will intersect with your life and how you will be able to be better prepared for some potential disasters, go ahead and grab a line now while you can. In the meantime, Greg Hunter's going to actually give us some of those, some things to look out for in the months ahead, things that are will be indicators that what the experts he has spoken with and have made their predictions will be coming true. We'll tell you more about that coming up next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. All right, so Greg Hunter, all things being equal, and you've spoken with some pretty smart people, what should we be looking for in the months and years ahead to get a better indication of this devaluation of which you speak? So the price of gas spiking in the next couple of weeks?
Well, not in the next couple of weeks, but let's do my favorite thing. My favorite thing is a picture's worth a thousand words, that old Asian saying. And if you go back to the Fed's biggest fears, something I wrote about on CNN, on USAWatchdog.com, there's a chart on there. And the chart, about halfway down the page, of the Fed's biggest fear, it's November 8th, it's a chart from Credit Suisse, it's an updated chart, and it shows the recast, the adjustable rate mortgage resets. And if you look at this chart, don't be confused, just look at the tsunami looking, you know, a big blip in November of this year right now, a little dip, and then of November of next year, a big dip, a big increase in recast resets. In other words, the loan will reset and people will probably have to pay higher mortgage payments. I call this the Fed's biggest fear. And the reason why it's the biggest fear, and I'll get to this as a warning sign, is because they have to have people paying those mortgages. They have to keep the payments low. They have to keep people in their homes, and the mortgage stream going through, like the attorney general in Iowa saying, hey, everybody wins. We don't want these mortgages to go into default. We want the servicers to get their fees. We want the investors to get their money. We want the people to stay in their homes. What are the payments, man? So if you take a look at that chart, you see this tsunami of recast that will be going through. They'll be peaking in November this time, but this time next year, and they'll be with us until about November of 2012. If you think that we're done with the real estate, we're at a bottom, no way. Look at this chart. Now, in order for the Fed, and here's why this is a warning sign, in order for the Fed to keep these rates down, what are they going to have to do? They're going to have to keep buying treasuries, forcing down the 10-year note, which is how mortgages are set. They're going to have to try to keep interest rates artificially low until this clears out. This is a warning sign for the value of the dollar, because either they could raise rates and defend the dollar and make things actually cheaper, or they can print dollars, they can force rates down, but they would sacrifice the buying power of the dollar. And remember the president, he wants to double exports. Well, that's a twofer, isn't it? You keep rates down, you keep people in their homes, but you destroy the dollar while you're doing it. That's a warning sign. This is not going to be a 1 or 2 week or a flash trade. This is a process. This is a big change coming to America.
Okay. Well, I wanted
One of the things.
That's one of the things. But you also hung out there this idea of gas prices going up. So I wanted to make sure.
Because if people start, if they demand higher dollar prices in the Middle East, if the people, remember, this is the reserve currency. Everybody in the world has dollars. If everybody in the world wants to sell their dollars, what happens when everybody wants to sell? The price goes down. If we have to finance these tremendous amount of, you know, multiple trillions of dollars in debt, Lawrence Kotlikoff at the University of Boston said, what we have really is, this is his words, Enron-style accounting. Our real debt and commitment is $202 trillion. Just to give you an idea what $1 trillion is for perspective, $1 trillion is a stack of $100 bills, not end-to-end, stacked on top of each other, going up nearly 68 miles into space. That's $1 trillion.
Right.
There's no way we ever pay that off in real money. So the warning signs, take a look at the price of gold. Take a look at the price of silver. If you take a look at the price of silver, I'm not a seller. I don't sell it. But I will tell you some of the research on it. The former all-time high of silver was $50. Now, granted, the Hunt brothers were manipulating the market, blah, blah, blah. But some would say almost every market is manipulated in one way or the other. But the all-time high was $50. Well, what is it now? About 25 bucks an ounce?
Right.
Well, but you're measuring that nominally. You're measuring that in dollars. You have to measure that inflation-adjusted, real inflation-adjusted. That's what John Williams at ShadowStats.com does. He works and puts out a newsletter largely for hedge funds and Fortune 500 companies and oil companies. If you're building a platform in the Gulf, you better know what the price of steel and the price of labor and the price of oil is going to be projected to be, because that platform is going to take you 5, 6, 7 years to produce, to build.
Right.
That's what he does. Now, anyway, the long and short of it is that if you take a look at silver, it's now $25 an ounce. It's only halfway its all-time high. So but what does that equal in 1980 money, $3 an ounce? Right. Look at gold. Some people would say, oh, it's $1,360 or $1,370 an ounce. Oh, it's a bubble. Really? They just announced unprecedented the second round that we're going to print money like crazy and gold's in a bubble? Really?
Right.
If you take a look at its all-time high in 1980, its previous all-time high, its real all-time high, and you look at it now, nominally it's higher in nominal dollars, but inflation-adjusted dollars, if you did inflation the way it was done in 1980, according to John Williams, and you did the inflation all the way out to today, you'd have to have $7,400 gold price to equal $850 with a buying power in 1980.
But in terms of real dollars, how this helps, let's say that somebody owns a home, they're a senior, they've been thinking about selling the house sometime in the next 5 years. What's a good time for that? Should they be selling now before, or can they wait 2 more years out of their home? What do you think?
I think if you're selling a house, I would sell as soon as I could. Take a look at the resets. Take a look at, some people say, well, if we're going to have inflation, I might as well have a house. Well, if we're going to have inflation, most people don't pay cash for a house. They pay cash for gold. They pay cash for silver. They pay cash for the groceries. They don't pay cash for a house. It's relative to what are interest rates? What are the payments? If the interest rates, you know, the old saying, like my dad used to say, 10% of $150,000 or 5% of $300,000. Well, listen, if rates go up, prices are going to come down because of that age-old "what are the payments, man?" question.
Right.
So I think you've seen probably the best real estate prices that you're going to see. I think the pressure is going to be downward. Meredith Whitney, the big banking analyst one of the first people to say, "Hey, Citigroup has to cut their." This has been there at $50 a share. Citigroup's going to have to cut their dividend. And, everybody on CNBC was, come on, Citigroup. Well, what are they now? They would have gone bankrupt if they wouldn't have the government, you and I, the taxpayer, bail them out. And they didn't have to cut their dividend. Anyway, she says she thinks housing prices are going down from here.
What about, and I haven't seen this on USA Watchdog, so I'm asking you something without knowledge that you have an answer for it, but I've flipped through a lot of your articles. Have you spoken much about what you think the future is of Social Security?
Social Security, we have a $202 trillion debt in commitment. If you take a look at on one of my posts, I have the debt clock on there, and it says we have a $13.8 trillion debt. If it is around, the money they pay you in is not going to be have the buying power that you think it should have. I mean, everybody should Google this term, Greenspan in 1966. The Greenspan 1966. And if you do that, you will see an article written by the former Federal Reserve Chairman Alan Greenspan. This is when he was like Anakin Skywalker before he turned into Darth Vader, and he talked about how gold. He did a big write-up on this, and it was published in a Detroit newspaper. He did a big write-up about how gold protects your buying power and keeps governments from stealing your buying power. It's the fallacy of the FDIC insurance. You know, it's like, oh, my money's insured. Well, okay, yeah. How much do we owe you? We owe you $100,000. We owe you $250,000. Okay, we'll give you $250,000. Gas is $7.50 a gallon. A loaf of bread is $14.50. Sure.
Right.
And
right.
John Williams, the economist John Williams, and other people say the same thing, that the dollar, if everybody rushes for the dollar exit and everybody starts selling dollars in the world stage, you could see a pretty significant bump up. In the first place, you'd see it as in fuel. You'd see it in oil prices. You can see a pretty significant bump up in the price of fuel. And, of course, you know, oil is used in everything from paint to cosmetics to putting in your gas tank to your engine to, you know,
food,
antifreeze, you name it.
Doritos.
You know, maybe.
Right. I mean, food. I mean, there's petroleum products and food, for that matter. I don't know about Doritos. All right, let me get to Tricia, west of the Rockies, Redlands, California, on Coast to Coast. For Greg Hunter, we'll get a couple of calls in before the top of the hour and then a bunch next hour. Tricia?
Hi. I thought I heard in the news yesterday or the day before that they were actually thinking about going back to the gold standard. Do you really think that that would happen? And if so, how would that affect future inflation?
Greg, before you answer that question, Tricia, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Are you married?
Yeah.
Can you still fit in your wedding dress?
No.
Okay, go ahead, Greg. I think I keep thinking about going back to the gold standard, be like all of us being able to wear the clothes we wore when we got married. But Greg, what about you?
Well, I'll tell you something. Let's go back to 1980. In 1980, gold went up to $850 an ounce. Actually, it was only there for 5 days, but it was around $750, $850, somewhere in there. You know, for about a year, we could have gone back to the gold standard. And what that means is that at that price, you could pretty much take in every dollar that we had produced up in that to that point. And in order to do that, you would have to value gold at $850 an ounce. Now, James Rickards, who is a former investment banker, he does risk analysis at Omnis. He's an expert on this. He was in the Center of Long-Term Capital Management. All that to say, this is a connected guy. This is not a kook. This is a real Wall Street guy. And he said, if you take a look at the price of money right now, you know, you would have to probably have more than, you know, maybe gold at $10,000, $12,000 an ounce. If you wanted to really equal every dollar out there, it might be $39,000 an ounce. I'm not projecting that. I'm saying that we could possibly go back on the gold standard because people say, well, there's not enough gold in the world. Well, there is if the price is high enough.
Right.
And, you know, you can only make mine about 1 or 2% a year, right? You can't produce gold, to infinity. And what gold would do and what you're talking about, the head of the IMF was talking about having some kind of a standard. How do you – this is coming down to with the Fed printing money. The overarching question is becoming, what is money? What can you say is money? And money has to be three things. Money has to be something you can use in a transaction. Money has to be valuable. But in order for it to truly be money, it has to store value. You cannot store value in dollars.
Right.
Because the Fed is printing them like crazy. Don't kid yourself. They want to see the value of the dollar go down. The value of the dollar, if they keep doing this, will go down. And they're in a kind of a catch-22 situation where they have this tremendous amount. I think what they're doing is they don't care about the little guy. If they did, they'd print money and hand out, you know, $5,000, $10,000 to every man, woman, and child in the country, but they're not doing that. The money's going into buying securities, the mistakes of bankers. It's going into the bank. I mean, look at Goldman Sachs. They're the ones spearheading. If you or I wanted to buy treasuries, I could go on Treasury Direct and I could buy treasuries, right? No commission. Ben Bernanke's buying treasuries, and you know who he's using? Goldman. He's paying Goldman Sachs a giant commission to buy treasuries. He could just go right to the treasury and buy them, but instead, he's using a middleman. Why? Because he wants to funnel money into Goldman Sachs and to the bank. This is unbelievable. The head of the New York Fed is a former Goldman guy. A partner. So the long and short of it with all this is that's not such a far – it's not so much we'd go on a gold standard, but they would use gold to determine a value to what are my dollars worth. If gold was $7,000 an ounce, then why I know what my dollar's worth now?
Right. Brad is in Dallas, first time caller line on Coast to Coast for Greg Hunter. Brad?
Hey, Greg. Hey, Ian.
Hey, Brad.
I can't believe I got through. Hey, I got two things. One is consumer debt. I mean, America, we're so in debt, it's just unconscionable. But the second thing that I wanted to ask you about, you know, the first Bush, he created like this new world order, and he, you know, he basically outsourced all of our jobs. And, you know, he said we'd have a service economy. And then he created NAFTA, which was basically just taking Mexico and giving them jobs so that they could buy products and, you know, fuel all of the banks and whatnot. So I just wondered your comment on that.
You're correct. They did export the jobs. People think, well, China took our jobs. No, China didn't take our jobs. American companies took our jobs overseas. American companies took our textile manufacturing. They took our equipment manufacturing. They took our shoe manufacturing. You name it. The furniture manufacturing, a lot of that stuff has gone overseas. Why? Because they wanted to pay somebody $2 an hour or $1 an hour. There's no OSHA. There's no environmental protection laws. Other
insurance.
No
health insurance.
There are no rules. It's just profit, just pure profit. And that worked great for a while, as long as the people could use their house as an ATM machine, and they can constantly refinance their house, and their stocks were going up, and their housing prices were going up. Wow, we felt rich. We felt rich without producing anything. And the problem is we can't change like that. They want to export our way out of this. And we don't really produce industrial goods like we did. Now, our ace in the hole is we have the best growing region in the world. The Midwest, the flyover country, is the most valuable real estate growing crop-wise in the world. Thank goodness America has that.
Okay. Let's go to, let's see. It'd be Kevin, east of the Rockies in Dallas for Greg Hunter, Watchdog, USA Watchdog. Kevin?
Hey, Ian, how are you tonight?
Good. Got to be quicker because I got to get you before the top of the hour.
Very quick. Quick comment for you and a very quick question for him. Comment for you on 570 KLIF here in Dallas and surrounding areas. Most nights there is a half minute, 45 second competition with commercials when the intro music starts, and it's very annoying.
It must be a computer error.
Yeah.
Sorry.
And the question is, in the foreseeable future, after all the analysis, Mr. Hunter, do you see if the dollar continues to fall, is it probable that we will be overtaken by a larger financial power such as China and/or an ally of China? And if so, will it be only financial or actual?
That's a good question.
And I'll listen off air.
Yeah. That's a scary thought, isn't it? The idea that we would be so vulnerable financially that we would no longer hold the paper to ourselves.
We already are vulnerable.
You hang on to that answer. We'll get to that coming up. Okay. We'll get to that after the top of the hour. Greg Hunter, USAWatchdog.com. That's the website. And I'm not going to – maybe it's appropriate because he was calling from Dallas and listening on KLIF that we give you a cliffhanger here for the top of the hour. But it's the best way to get started for next hour. Are we talking about a financial ownership to somebody else who'll come in and say, hey, look, we already own this much of your country. This is what we want from you all from now on. Could we end up weakening ourselves so much that there is an actual threat of somebody invading? We'll find out more about that coming up. We'll get to more of your calls, just like we'll be doing this Friday night. I'll be in for George on Friday night on Coast to Coast doing open lines. We'll have a first hour guest, maybe even a first hour or two, and then we'll go open lines for the rest of the evening. Love doing that with you. That's coming up this Friday night. Give George another well-deserved night off. So we've cleared out the West and the East in the first-time caller line. Everybody hang on to the wild card lines. You're up next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Ponet.